All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am, as always, your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And as always, if you are one of those people that listens to podcasts in your car, just doesn't like digging through podcast apps, you can ask your smart device, play podcast Locked On Vikings. It'll take you to the most recent episode. So we have a little bit of catching up to do from the weekend. Some things transpired that we didn't really have last time I recorded a podcast. So we're going to catch up on all of that stuff, and then we'll talk about kind of what's going on right now in the world of we're in the kind of later waves of free agency where the Vikings tend to be more active. So we might actually see more Vikings news than we did last week. But first, let's talk about kind of the major thing that happened. So after Anthony Barr's contract was signed and we saw the structure of it, and we kind of saw that the Vikings had, they were under the cap, but they didn't even have enough to sign their draft picks, let alone go after offensive line help. So we knew something else had to give. And where we left it was that the Vikings had offered a restructure to Everson Griffen, essentially with the ultimatum. They pull off a lot of, all teams do this, where they say, here's a restructure of your contract, and you can either sign it and that's great, or if not, we're going to cut you and you hit the free agency market. And that's actually a difficult decision. It's not so much of a threat, even though it sounds really punitive, because for a guy like Everson Griffen, it might be better for him to hit the market. He probably makes more money on an open edge market right now with all of the crazy money being thrown around. He probably gets a huge contract, or he takes a restructure to stay here at his home where he's been for so many years, where his kids are growing up and all that. And he decided to take the restructure. That restructure wasn't so much of a restructure as it was a pay cut and essentially converting the next few years into an option. So Everson Griffen doesn't have any dead money left on his cap, which means he can be cut any offseason. And that is not a good deal for a guy. Even a guy, you know, set to make $12, $13, $14 million a year, doesn't matter if the team says, nah, and lets you go and you don't see any of that cash. So now the Vikings are basically resolving to have this conversation with him again next year, and that's probably pretty good for Everson Griffen, because if he hits the market this year, he's coming off a down year, he had his mental health issue, that's going to tank his value in the eyes of a lot of teams. And if he's worried about making the most money, he might want to see the market next year. So if they offer him a similar deal next year, it makes a lot more sense for him to then say, nah, I'll take my chances on the market and thanks for everything, Vikings. And you know, this might be his last season as a Viking, or maybe he takes another pay cut and maybe he never, you know, he age takes over and he never regains form. But if he does regain form, then the Vikings are choosing between paying for a good edge rusher or cutting him and letting somebody else pick him up and getting younger at the position and replacing him with something else. You'd have another year of Stephen Weatherly to see what you have there. You have another year if the Vikings draft someone, or if they find a way to pick someone up, or if like an undrafted free agent emerges. Like, all kinds of things can happen between then and now to characterize that decision. And we'll talk about that way off in the future when that is happening. But for now, Everson Griffen remains a Viking. The Vikings are up to, I think, just shy of $7 million in cap space, which is just enough to sign a guard of Nick Easton's caliber. And they've looked at a couple guys, and we'll talk about that in a second. And then pay your draft picks. And once the last couple moves here in free agency transpire, we'll kind of know where the Vikings are at once they're at about, call it $5 million-ish in cap space. Once they're at that part, then we kind of know, all right, now they're looking at the draft because they have no more room to sign anybody else. So the Vikings have tendered an offer to Nick Easton, but Easton is also fielding offers from other teams. So the Vikings have kind of given him what probably was what they can pay him, because I know they have a very high opinion of Easton, and a lot of it is because of his physical traits and the scheme that the Vikings run, which is actually going to be the main topic of today's episode. We're going to talk about scheme fit and what kind of thing that means and why that can kind of characterize your decisions. I've seen a lot of unrest on social media about like the fact that the Vikings aren't going after players who are scheme fits. You know, we've seen this even last year with Will Hernandez, who turned out to be a great guard for the Giants. But the Vikings basically said, oh, he wasn't a scheme fit, so we weren't interested. And I think people balk at that. Like, what do you mean he's not a scheme fit? Like, he's good at playing guard. Don't you just need a guard? And I wanted to go into kind of what these schemes are and the different traits they require, because Will Hernandez is very good at the things the Giants ask him to do. And I think him specifically would have been all right at the things that the Vikings asked him, would have asked him to do. Like, I think that would have turned out fine. But the things that the Giants do just fit better with the things that Will Hernandez is good at. So like the Giants version of Will Hernandez is probably a better player than the hypothetical Vikings version of Will Hernandez, and they evaluate that accordingly. And because the draft, just like free agency, is an auction market, whoever's willing to take the guy highest is going to get the guy, means the Giants get the guy, and scheme fits kind of stay with their schemes, even if they are good enough to like transcend scheme fit, which I don't think anybody on this market is really. Even like the Roger Saffolds and like the big superstar guys, I don't think are good enough to transcend scheme fit. I think you need to be like Quentin Nelson or Marshall Yanda. So we'll talk about that, but real quick, I do also want to touch on something that was going down over the weekend. If you are not plugged into social media this time of year with football, A, congratulations to you. B, you missed an entire Stephon Diggs saga that I just want to relay to you because I found it hilarious. So for some reason, Redskins fans on Twitter and on Reddit started discussing this weird theory that Stephon Diggs was going to be traded to the Redskins, and they started talking about all this, and essentially they saw Stephon Diggs' tweets. And if you don't follow Stephon Diggs on Twitter, he tweets cryptic stuff all the time. It's usually coinciding with some sort of Maryland sports, you know, college sports or whatever, the college basketball's going on. But out of context, it looks like he's, you know, freaking out about some behind-the-scenes thing. And I think we as Vikings fans, if you've followed Diggs for a while, you know he just tweets weird stuff and you just kind of know to ignore it. But for fans of another fan base or for people who maybe have just started following him or just started paying attention to this, it could be really alarming. It could, like, set off the sirens. And so that happened on like, Redskins Twitter. And then Diggs's brother, you know, and they all grew up in the Maryland area, so they're all Washington fans. So he posts a Photoshop of Stephon Diggs in a number 14 Redskins jersey, and then everything freaks out, and everybody freaked out for a whole afternoon until Adam Schefter, you know, everybody tried to, like, dig through their sources, and all of the, like, beat reporters were like, I have no idea what this is, I haven't heard a thing. Finally, Adam Schefter comes out and says, yeah, no, it's not happening. One source said F no. I've got a really good guess as to who that source was. And that was kind of the end of it. But it was this really funny saga, and it's a fun example of just, like, how crazy fandoms can get this time of year. And also a great example of, like, don't read too much into things. You'll just create stuff that isn't there and end up disappointed, especially for all the Washington fans that got, like, super hyped about Stephon Diggs coming over for, like, a second rounder or whatever. I kind of actually wanted to do, like, what would that trade look like? But I think the scheme fit thing is a much more relevant point, and that would just be a dumb hypothetical. I don't know, maybe save it for a rainy day. But for now, I am going to cut away to an ad break, and when I come back, we'll talk a lot more about scheme fit and about some of the guys that the Vikings have been rumored to be looking at now in this, like, second wave of free agency, the Easton situation, and all of that. So I will see you all in a minute. All right, welcome back. So let's just update you on the guard situation, because essentially that's the last thing the Vikings are going to be focusing on here. It doesn't sound like they're going to be addressing their now pretty gaping hole at 3-tech anytime soon. After draft picks, they've got, like, a little less than $2 million in cap space to deal with any problems, and really guard's the only one you can even have any sort of plan to be taken seriously with that little amount of money. So it's going to be pretty much guard and then the draft. So where we stand right now, the Vikings have an offer on the table for Nick Easton, but Nick Easton has met with other teams, so the Vikings might lose out on him. This was exacerbated on Saturday when the Saints, one of the teams that has met with Nick Easton and is interested in him, had their starting center for years in Max Unger, who, you know, they traded Jimmy Graham for him from the Seahawks a while ago, and he's been their starting center ever since. So he retires, and now the Saints have a pretty big need at center. Well, Nick Easton, if you recall, was a center for most of his career, and he just recently moved to guard in, like, the 2017 season. He actually had played center for the Vikings a lot, too, so he would fill that need. I don't think he's, like, a top-tier guy. I think he's probably a bottom-half starter, but he would be a starting quality center, and right now the Saints have nobody there. So that retirement could cause the Saints to up their offer to Nick Easton, and I don't think the Vikings would match even if they had cap space, because I think they have an evaluation of him, but I don't think it's like they're not going to, you know, give him a $5 million a year contract or anything like that, and I think that they'll look elsewhere. And after that, we saw rumors that they were doing just that. So they're kind of planning for if they lose Nick Easton, what happens here. So one guy that I talked about on a previous podcast is Stefan Wisniewski, who is a guard who was released, or I think he had an option not picked up from the Eagles, which does matter because of, like, comp picks and stuff. But he was a pretty solid player. He's a scheme fit. We talked about him on a previous episode, so I won't go too deep into him. But the more concretely reported one, you know, the Wisniewski thing was reported as kind of, they're kicking the tires, they're seeing who's out there. But the Vikings have actually shown a lot of interest in Josh Klein, who was released from the Titans. So the Titans have completely overhauled their interior offensive line, and a lot of people are talking about where those scraps go. You know, there's a lot of talk about Quentin Spain, who still hasn't been picked up, but the Vikings looked at him and essentially said he's not a scheme fit, which we'll talk about later in the show. But they did look at Josh Klein, who is a scheme fit, which to me is really interesting because what scheme did they run in Tennessee, you know? That said, you know, Josh Klein did play in New England for a long time, and who knows, you know, Tennessee had that weird exotic smash mouth, so, like, I don't know if he played in Tennessee is really an argument for or against any scheme fit. They were just doing weird stuff over there. But the point is, you know, they watched Titans tape and did all their Titans scouting and found, no, not the big name that everybody thought was going to get a huge contract in Quentin Spain. No, they were more interested in Josh Klein, and that is really interesting. And so I tweeted that out, and everybody basically said scheme fit, scheme fit, scheme fit. And then people responded to all those scheme fit things by saying, oh, they're being so stupid. Just get good linemen. Stop overthinking it. And so I wanted to kind of talk about that whole situation. But first, a little background on Josh Klein. He essentially played very well in both New England and Tennessee until specifically last year. Then he had a down year. He had a really bad game where he gave up 9 pressures against Houston, and he kind of fell apart. And if the Vikings do sign him, I'll go way more in depth into that. But essentially, he's another one of those guys that, like, had a great career until specifically last year, and now the Vikings are trying to buy low, which, if you have ever looked into the stock market, that's how you're supposed to play things. So we'll go into more depth on Josh Klein if they do pull the trigger on that, or whoever they do end up pulling the trigger on, whether or not Easton comes back and signs with his home team, or the team he's been with for the longest amount of time, or whether or not it ends up being someone else. Obviously, we will talk about it in great depth when something happens. But right now, I want to talk a little bit more in the abstract about the Vikings and scheme fit and what that means, because I think that's a term that gets thrown around a lot, and a lot of people don't really think about, like, what that entails. They just say, is it a scheme fit or is it not, and how important is it? But what does scheme fit mean? What does it mean when a player is a scheme fit for one team but not for another one? How different can it be playing guard for the Giants versus playing guard for the Vikings? And I wanted to dive into that so that we could kind of look back on this when we're looking at, especially at the draft, you know, when we're looking at certain players that the Vikings may or may not be interested in, or if they pass on a guard that's not a scheme fit or something, we can look back at this episode and kind of explain why. So I've talked a whole bunch, especially when we were talking about Rick Dennison and Gary Kubiak, that the Vikings are running a zone scheme. They ran a zone scheme last year. They're committed even more fully to it this year. They have a zone scheme running back in Dalvin Cook. Nick Easton is a zone scheme player. Pat Elflein is a zone scheme player. Brian O'Neill is unbelievably a zone scheme player. And what all these guys have in common is agility, oversize, and strength. Essentially be quicker and be able to get to a different spot and get leverage versus just being able to, like, beat you mano a mano. And I want to, like, kind of even rewind further about, like, how the Vikings got to that point to where they're so committed to this scheme. So think about, just in the abstract, like, offensive line play in general. Think about one offensive line, say any offensive guard. When you're trying to beat a defensive tackle, what do? You get up, you push on them, and you try to be stronger, right? And if you have a lot of guys like that, you can run, like, man-power scheme, essentially man-to-man. Like, I tell you, all right, you block 98, you block 97, you block 72, and we'll be good to go. And if you have guys that are big enough and strong enough where they can, like, reliably win those matchups, you don't have to overcomplicate things. You can just be very simple and say, you just block the guy, and you will win often enough for that to work out for me. This is something that the New York Giants can pull off because they've had, like, a lot of talent, especially on the interior lately, with Will Hernandez, and they had Brett Jones, who's a very good pass blocker, and now they have the other guy that they just, like, extended, and they've had success on the interior because they've just had guys, you know, an abundance of players who can just win one-on-one and just, like, be better than a defensive line. But here's the thing, though. Those players are rare, and it's really hard to find a lot of them. You know, good for the Giants for figuring that out. It's the one thing that they, like, don't have to figure out with their franchise, but not everybody gets that. And in terms of offensive line plays, there's a lot of different ways to, like, mitigate the problem. So say you are starting a new team, or you just took over a team, and you cleaned house, you cleaned out all the offensive line, and you have to build one from scratch. you're probably not going to be able to pull off a man scheme because there's just not enough players in the draft or in free agency. You just can't get that many guys, even if you're willing to spend the resources. And if you are, then you're spending so much on the offensive line, it might hamper your ability to be quality elsewhere. So what if there was a way to take guys that aren't the biggest, strongest ones on the market and win with them anyways? And this is where the zone scheme comes in, where essentially who you block is determined by how they align. And it actually kind of is reminiscent of the way that Zimmer runs his defense, where the way that they line up determines what you do. And being reactive like that is good because it means that whatever their plan is, you are ready for it. You have a set of rules and kind of a flow chart almost, where whatever they do, whenever they zig, you're going to zig in the same way instead of zigging while they zag. And make no mistake, this isn't some weird idea that the Vikings have and are trying to be smarter than everybody else. This is what Washington does. This is what the Rams do. This is what the Saints do. All really, really quality rushing teams all win in this way, despite the fact that, you know, a lot of the linemen coming out of college just aren't as big and strong because, you know, when you're a big, strong football player, they're going to put you at the money position, like edge rusher, sometimes at offensive tackle or defensive tackle. You know, they're going to put you in these, like, more money. Like, if you're a huge player and you're really, really good and you have a future in the NFL, you're not going to be like, I want to be a guard. You're going to be like, I want to be an edge rusher and make millions of dollars. So there's this huge influx of those guys, and now nobody wants to play offensive line if they're a good enough athlete. So you have to find a way to win with not very good athletes, lest you just commit to a plan that's never going to work. So the Vikings are one of those teams. They're following in the mold of the Rams and the Skins and the Saints, and they are trying to find players that work in that same way. So I'm going to go a little bit more into the nitty-gritty of what that means, because I'm still speaking in vaguer terms than I'd like to, but I do have to step away to a quick ad break a second time. When I come back, we'll get really deep into it. I'll see you guys in a minute. All right, we're back. So we've talked about traits previously in offensive line. When we did our combine preview, we talked about measured athleticism and, you know, the fact that in zone schemes you want more agile guys and in man schemes you want more, like, powerful guys. And we've spoken about that a lot, but we've never spoken about why that is. We've just kind of accepted it as fact, and I am not really comfortable with that. I want to explain why things are the way they are, and like, what are you asking guys to do that makes agility so much more important? So I want you to think back to a play that you probably remember from a couple of years ago. It was in the Packers game a couple years ago when Barr broke Aaron Rodgers' collarbone, that home game against the Packers in 2017, and one of the touchdowns that the Viking ended up winning the Vikings that game was a screen pass to Jerick McKinnon, where Pat Elflein, and it was actually Jeremiah Searles was playing in that game, got out in front of a screenplay and essentially carried Jerick McKinnon all the way down. I'll link the play, the highlight, in the show notes so you can just see these linemen, like, just rumbling down the field. And Jeremiah Searles is actually blocking someone on the goal line. This was a 27-yard touchdown. He's 27 yards down the field blocking someone on the goal line so Jerick McKinnon can waltz in without really trying at all. And that's a really extreme example, but essentially that's what you're asking linemen to do very, very often. So the way that a zone scheme works, and I'm going to get really into the nitty-gritty here, is that you are deciding, you're determining who you block, whether you are covered or uncovered, which means, is there a guy in front of you or not? So if there's a guy in front of you, by and large, block that guy. And there are some pulls and some weird wrinkles and stuff that'll, you know, depending on the play design, that'll mess with that. But by and large, the rule is if there's a guy in front of you, block him. And it doesn't matter who it is, and it doesn't matter if he backs up and then goes somewhere else and someone else comes in front of you, now you block that guy. Just block who is in front of you. And that can really help, especially mentally, with a line that hasn't played together for a long time. And, you know, they have to be very in sync about, like, dealing with that. So communication is definitely important, but there is some value to, like, stop caring who it is, don't look for numbers, don't try to figure out who's who, just block the guy in front of you. There's a simplicity that can help with younger players. And here's where the agility comes in. You are going to ask players all the time, if the defense doesn't line anybody up in front of you, you chip a guy near you, and you'll see them, like, if you see, like, highlights of training camp and the drills and stuff in the local news or whatever, you'll see them practicing this, where somebody will hold up, like, a little blocking pad, and they'll shove it with one arm and then run on and dive into a mat. That's essentially what you're doing, is you give somebody a shoulder to make, you know, the guy next to you's job easier, and then you run into what's called the second level, or run downfield and try to find a linebacker, find somebody, and look for work. Usually, defenses are guarding gaps, especially in the run game. They're setting things up so that, all right, they run between the center and guard, that's your job. If they run between the guard and tackle, that's your job. If they run outside, that's your job. And they have somebody kind of assigned to each one. So that means that if there's, you know, all four defensive linemen are lined up and nobody is in front of you, that means a linebacker is your job. A linebacker is going to probably be there for if they run to a spot where none of those defensive linemen have lined up, which means you just go down to where the linebacker is and meet him. And if you're fast enough to get to the linebacker and agile enough to actually get your hands on him, because he's probably a lot quicker than you, so you do have to be agile as an offensive lineman to get your hands on him, then that means if the running back does go behind you, depending on what the call is or whatever, then he'll have an easier time breaking free of the second level, and then suddenly a good run can turn into a great run if you can lock that block off. So that's roughly a zone scheme, and I only have so much time, so I can't get too into like the details of those rules and if they're like on your shoulder or on the guy inside your shoulder, and like there's a lot of double teams and stuff that get worked into this as well, where, you know, if there's a nose tackle like a Linval Joseph or even a guy like Aaron Donald, instead of block the guy in front of you, it's both of you block the guy in front of you when he's 99. Sometimes that happens, and against their like biggest guy, you know, their Haloti Ngata types, you'll like always double team him because you're worried so much about getting agile guys that you might just have havoc wreaked on you if you let like Damon Harrison be one-on-one all day, which is something that actually happened to the Vikings a little bit too much for my taste. So I hope that they work that scheme out. And I think getting a guy like Kubiak and Dennison is kind of their job is to identify and solve those problems. But because you essentially have thrown strength to the wind and you're just going to double team when that becomes a problem, that means that you can kind of generate some value out of all this, right? Like, you can get a guy like, say, John Sullivan to be your center, who's very smart and he's always going to have the call right, but let's be honest, I mean, he's in his 30s, his athleticism is not going to be what it once was, he's not going to be as big and strong, and he was coming off a pretty bad injury. That was, by all means, a bargain bin acquisition for the Rams, and have success with him, because your whole thing is basically designed to get different leverage and to put the defensive line at more of a disadvantage. So imagine going against this from the perspective of a defensive lineman. You're a big nose tackle, and you're going to be basically bigger and stronger than everybody on, you know, across the field from you. You're Haloti Ngata. You're Vince Wilfork. You know, these big, big guys. You're going to be bigger and stronger. So if somebody challenges you to go directly at him, like Oklahoma drill style, you're going to win that every single time. But imagine you're lining up for a play, and the second the ball is snapped, the entire offense starts running to your right. And now, so is the running back. So now you have to not only find a way to get through that offensive line, but you have to get through like a moving target. Well, you don't really get that same leverage that you would always have because they're not coming directly at you. You have to find a way to sift through them. And if they get their hands on you while you're trying to sift through them, well, now they're going to have leverage on you because they're pushing from the side. And it's a lot harder to push somebody who is like on your shoulder than it is to push somebody who is directly in front of you, or you can get both hands. So you're going to get washed out of the play, and suddenly you've had no impact unless you can burst through the line so quickly that nobody gets a hand on you. And that does happen to zone schemes sometimes. It happened to the Vikings a bunch as well. But that's going to happen a lot more often if you try to like change things to like a man scheme because you signed a guy who wasn't a scheme fit. So you're asking players in review to run down the field a lot. You're asking them to be very accurate with how they run. You're asking them to be very agile with how they run. And you're not necessarily asking them to be big and strong and powerful. So take a guy like Will Hernandez, who is kind of good at both, but he's better at being big and strong and powerful. But if you pay top dollar for a guy who's big and strong and powerful, and then because of your zone scheme, never ask him to do that, aren't you kind of wasting your money? And so, you know, guys who had success in man schemes, or guys who look like they'll have success in man schemes, guys who are big and strong and powerful, and maybe agile too, maybe not, like they might be successful because of a skill that you're never going to ask them to use. And that's the point of a scheme fit. Now, that doesn't mean that if they played in a man scheme, they just shouldn't play in your scheme. And I actually do think the Vikings take that too far sometimes. I think they say, oh, he plays in a man scheme, he's not a scheme fit, we're done. If a guy is agile, he'll fit in a zone scheme, whether or not he's big and strong and powerful. Being big and strong and powerful is just gravy, shouldn't be the goal, but it doesn't hurt, right? But the thing is, everything's an auction market, right? So if somebody who does care about them being big and strong and powerful is willing to pay for that big, strong power and you aren't, they're going to get that guy. And you're going to have to look elsewhere for somebody maybe more agile. So looking at a guy like Josh Klein, who has had success in zone schemes before, he has the proper athleticism, he's getting up there in years, he's coming off a down year, and that's all things that should be considered and will probably lower his price tag, versus a guy like Quentin Spain, who the Vikings had evaluated and essentially said, eh, not a scheme fit, because what he is best at is not something the Vikings will really need to ask him to do unless they want to change their whole scheme, and then suddenly Brian O'Neill and Pat Elflein and all those guys are going to, like, suck way more than they already have. So the point of a scheme fit isn't something where, like, there are, it's not like there are slot receivers and outside receivers and you know, guys are, like, slotted into one or the other. It's a matter of looking at what that guy is good at and then asking yourselves, are we going to ask him to do that? And if the answer is no, then look at how good he is at the things you are going to ask him to do. And a player's overall success on a different team might be defined on different traits than what the Vikings are going to ask for, and that's what they're trying to scout. So that is kind of just my best bet at trying to do a primer on scheme fit in the NFL and what we mean when we talk about, you know, whether or not somebody is a scheme fit. I hope it made sense, and I hope it kind of, like, adds some clarity to, like, the Vikings' strategies through all this and why, you know, if you look at a guard like Will Hernandez and, hey, he's good and the Vikings passed on him, what gives? Well, what gives is that the Giants are asking him to do something and he's good at it, and the Vikings wouldn't have asked him to do that. It would have been a waste of his talents. So thank you guys so much for listening. I will hopefully be back for the Tuesday show with some really fun guard news. If not, we'll find something else to talk about. I am probably, once free agency winds to a close, I'm going to maybe try to work, like, daily mock drafts into episodes like this, depending on what else we have to talk about, because I really do want to get, like, really deep into the draft really soon. So stick around for that, especially if you're, like, really interested in the draft. And also check out Locked On NFL Draft. There's some great guys over there, too, that will help prime you on the positions that maybe the Vikings aren't looking at so much. But for now, that is going to do it for me. Thank you all so much for listening. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can find the show by just asking your smart device with your vocal cords, play podcast Locked On Vikings. You don't have to press a button. It'll just find the latest episode for you. And until next time, as always, Skol.